You're listening to the Pinto and White Shadow Show on KFGO.com and 740TheFan.com. But committed no crime and bad mistakes. I've made a few. I've had my share of bad kicks in my bed, but I've come through. And I need to go home.
Well, we know they're sick of that at NDSU's campus this week and probably for the next several months. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 026 podcast of the Pinto and White Shadow Show. I'm Daniel Pinto Gunderson, along with my co-host Brad, the white, slightly redder now, Shadow Jones, as NDSU, North Dakota State University football team, celebrates their third straight FCS national title in football. First things first, thank you so much for listening to the podcast here on KFGO.com. Of course, you can follow Brad, myself, on Twitter, at PintoKFGO for me. Brad Jones is
at the Bison Guy.
And, of course, friend us on Facebook. You can get us a comment on our podcast page on KFGO.com, which Marcus and Mayville will do. A lot of that for us. He tends to be the guy who kind of leads the charge in that regard. Hasn't been the only person, but he is one of the more consistent commenters. So we'll get to his comment from the 025 podcast. Of course, you can find us on iTunes. Just type in the Pinto and White Shadow Show in the search bar there. And of course, Gmail, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. Drop us a line. We're going to actually address an email sent to us probably back September, November, October, somewhere in that range. I cannot remember entirely, but it has to do with what we're going to talk about, and that's the future of Bison football. But before all that, let's get to the national championship game.
We're not going to get into it. My gosh!
But I mean, it was the national. It's the third.
I understand that, but you're burying the lead already.
How am I burying the? This is the lead. There's no way I'm burying the lead when this is the lead. This is the lead.
There is a soon-to-be Mrs. Pinto.
Oh yes.
And I don't know how we can go any further without congratulating you on your engagement.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it because it's the Pinto and White Shadow Show. I'm pretty sure she's actually never listened to one of our podcasts.
Okay.
My fiance, she's never listened to one of these things, so we could talk. She's an amazing person. I'm not going to talk horribly. I'm not going to air on dirty laundry. No, not the least. No, but yes, thank you very much. Proposed to her on New Year's Eve, and we are going to be married some point. We have a tentative idea of when the date is.
Yes. Where's the breaking news?
I'm not going to drop it right now.
I think this is the if you want to boost ratings for the Pinto and White Shadow Show, you tell all your friends and family that to find out when the wedding is, they got to listen to the podcast.
That actually is not a bad idea.
I know. Come on.
That's actually not a bad idea. I have to make sure it's set in stone because it was talked about, in fact, today before we recorded this podcast.
Interesting.
And we.
Would I be able to wear shorts to this wedding?
No, not in the least.
I would not be able to wear shorts to this wedding.
Well, it depends on the weather, but my guess would you wouldn't be.
Okay. All right. Am I going to need a shovel to be able to get my car out to get to this wedding?
Not necessarily, but you never know with North Dakota weather.
Okay. So we're looking at October-ish, somewhere right around October, November, right around in
You're
there.
You're way wrong.
I'm way wrong. Yeah. Okay, we're coming on the other side. So we're looking April, May of
You're
next
year. Closer now. A little warmer.
April, May of next year. Okay.
A little warmer. Which my parents would be, even my parents today were saying, well, when are you guys going to say that? Well, you know, we haven't talked about it. And you I know, had made and, mention and, of the fact that maybe, you know, next winter.
And I know I'm spending way too much time getting away before because we need to talk a lot of Bison football here since they, you know, won a national championship and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, that little thing.
But that's a pet peeve is as soon as you get engaged, the first question everybody asks, oh, what date? It's like, my goodness, I asked her half an hour ago.
Right. You know, so when are you guys going to set a date? What I've kind of gone with as my default answer is, oh, it's Prague in 2 weeks. Hope you can be there.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
That should be the answer. The default answer. Just find the worst place. Oh, we're going to go to Amsterdam.
Okay.
And everything's legal there. 2 weeks.
Sure,
so if you can join us, feel free.
I'm in.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
In.
No, no date, no timetable, anything like that. So we'll see what happens. But thank you very much for the congratulations. And so, well, congratulations on your tan, by the way, that you received.
Tan in air quotes there?
Yeah, yeah. That you received while you're down in Frisco. I think we got to get into it. We played this little bitty.
Next stop, Frisco, Texas, my Oma.
NDSU was there. They did a little of this.
Touchdown, Bison!
And then, of course, they did this.
Down to Texas, we own Frisco!
NDSU, the 35-7 national championship winners. Let's get Voice Guy in here.
Local.
And we are talking local. North Dakota State University, three-time FCS national champions, back-to-back-to-back.
They went Tommy Mansky on us.
Went Tommy Mansky.
Yeah.
Do you care to explain?
What, the back-to-back AAU national champions? Don't you remember those videos that they always used to advertise for on ESPN for the baseball drills? The Tom Emanski.
Jamal Spencer of Valley News Live tweeted that out.
Yeah?
And I was like, well, that must have something to do with, because he's a Michigan guy, and I'm like, must have something to do with Michigan.
No.
Had no idea,
the
but yes, yeah, thank you for that. Back-to-back-to-back AAU national
there
champions.
There we go.
So they're back-to-back-to-back FCS national champions. Congratulations to NDSU, the 24 seniors, Craig Bull, and the whole staff. It was good. I did not get a chance to go. I had a cousin that got married. And in fact, it ended up being okay because...
Not a cousin that you particularly like anymore.
No, he's a good guy. It didn't hurt. He was happy that I was able to show up. I was happy I ended up actually... It was nice. In all honesty, it was kind of refreshing to take a step back because before with the playoffs, I had been working... tweeting, blogging, doing all these things for KFGO.com. And it was kind of nice to...
Don't even try it.
Well, let me finish.
No.
Let me finish.
I don't like to do that.
Let me finish. Will you let me finish?
Will you let me finish? Can you let me finish?
Okay. It was nice to actually take a step back and be a fan at this game. Would it have been better to be a fan in Frisco than a fan on a couch in Fargo? Yeah.
Okay.
It would have been better to be a fan in Frisco. But at least for... 60 minutes or so, I got to be kind of a fan. I got to kind of kick back, have a couple cold ones, went to the fiance's cousin's place. Her husband cooked up brats, baked potatoes, chili, cheese dip. It was pretty nice. Watched on the high def screen. Would have rather been there. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
Not going to lie. But it was relaxing. So the guy who was there, and we're going to let him take the lead in this part with the questions that I'll ask him was... Brad Jones, the White Shadow, our correspondent for the podcast.
Yes.
Got a little tan while he was down in
Texas. I'm sunburnt. I am sunburnt.
Let's start with the weekend in general. What was the atmosphere like leading up to the game?
Well, we got down there about 4 o'clock on Thursday was when we arrived. My dad, my brother, my stepmom, my brother-in-law, sister, and I all went down and got there Thursday afternoon. And the biggest difference, and I've been there all 3 years, the biggest difference was just the amount of people and how much that has grown from the first year when there was a lot, but this year was crazy, crazy how many Bison fans there were. Every place that we stopped on the drive down, we bumped into Bison fans.
Okay.
Every place we stopped on the way back, every place that we stopped at on the way or when we were there, it was Bison fans everywhere. It felt like you were in Fargo. It really, really did. And it was really neat to have that part of the environment, just the whole area being even more enveloped by NDSU fans than what it had been in the past.
You know, that to me was one of the things a lot of Bison fans were taking into consideration that, oh, I don't know if we'll get another shot. I mean, this is the end of an era. We want to see the end of an era when we come down there. And I'll get into it more. We'll get into it more later in this podcast. But that was the feeling that fans had.
I think so, yeah.
And I think it showed.
And part of it, too, was the team was so good and people had so much confidence in the team with all of the players returning that more people bought tickets early.
Right.
There was a fair amount that did that last year. There was a ton that did that this year. And when everything worked out, I mean, it made it pretty easy to be able to make the arrangements and get down there.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I mean, everybody's buying in August. That was one of the cool things that they talked about on the broadcast was that, you know, these fans, they sold it out in August, you know, when they first went on sale. And then it was the you can buy 3 years worth of tickets, but that went on sale in, I want to say, September or something to that nature, that you could buy for this year, next year, and the year after that. Bison fans bought up those tickets. I mean, they were talking about how insane the contingency of Bison fandom was. Before kickoff, when they're panning the crowd, it was 7, 8, 9 shots of just pure Bison fans. And then they finally found Towson fans.
There were two pockets of Towson fans. Of the 19,000 and change that they announced for the attendance, I would bet 17, I would say, were at least 17 Bison fans. Maybe even a little more.
Yeah. It sounded pretty nuts. And I don't know if you got a chance to go, and I have to ask you about the third base bar, which was a spot that was hugely popular the first year, second year, and then third year. I did a little research. There was tweets and there was comments coming back here in Fargo about that. They run out of two types of liquor. They ran out of a certain kind of beer and a certain kind of liquor. So I called third base on Friday afternoon. It was about 3 o'clock. I called them up and I asked them. I said, are you guys out of this? They go, yeah, we're out of it. We're getting more ordered in. But if you remember the kerfuffle, the issue that happened the first year where the pep rally for NDSU was held in Plano. And the hotel itself ran out of booze.
Yes, I was there.
And that was the whole thing. I mean, that's what everybody talked about, was that the fans went down there and Plano wasn't ready for Bison Nation to come down there and drink them dry. That was the kind of the reoccurring theme. Even Mayor Massa, the mayor of Frisco, would come on Mike McFeely's show on KFGO and say, we're making sure, I've called every vendor in the area the second time that NDSU came down, stock up on booze. Stock up on booze. And evidently, third base, which is a very popular bar down there, did not stock up well enough. And the influx of Bison fans, from what I heard, was just incredible.
Yeah.
Like you said, it was kind of a 10-1, 9-1 kind of factor, where it was everybody you run into was Bison fans.
Yeah.
Sam Heater, I don't think I pronounced it.
Herder.
Herder, pardon me, Sam. I had tweeted out a picture that actually caught some viral recognition. He went to a Pizza Hut wing joint that was right next to the stadium, and on the sign it said, draft beer for Bison fans, $1.50, draft beer for Towson fans, $3.
I like that.
And
I
saw that when he tweeted out, I go, this is great, so I retweeted it, got some viral, it kind of went viral for him, that was pretty cool. But that was the weekend, it was the party for a lot of Bison fans, to be able to make this their vacation. And the reason it works out for Bison fans, and I've said this before, is because we're in a farming community, and a lot of people in the Red River Valley, and a lot of people in North Dakota in general, a lot of what they do for work revolves around farming, which happens between March, April, and October, and maybe even a little into November. But the months of essentially November to February, it's a lot of guys just sitting around, working on farms, working on tractors, whatever. They can't get onto the field. It's too cold. So what do? You take your trips during January, February, what have you. Why not head down to Texas? That's why NDSU has been able to bring such a large contingency of fans. It's because it's not just that they're going to travel with the team because they like them. They do that anyways. But it's because that a lot of the people who do work, I'd say 75-70% of the fans are... A majority of their work happens in the summer months.
I think you're overestimating that.
I don't want to get into it because it's an arbitrary factor.
Yes, it is.
Reality is that they're going to travel no matter what, and I think the best opportunity happens in that period. So that's why NDSU fans have been able to travel so well. So again, another big shout out, congratulations to them. Never ceases to amaze me, and I don't think it'll ever cease to amaze anybody how such a school. That as an FCS school can have a following like a mid-major to a major program. It really does when it comes to football, which is pretty spectacular. Now, the game in itself, as I was watching, that first quarter, the first 20 minutes, I'd say, Brad, Towson kind of dominated. Towson was able to move the ball as they saw fit, and NDSU was having trouble offensively. The biggest problem for Towson was the penalties.
Yeah.
False start here, bad play there. They, for a majority of the game, and I'll look at the first half stats here quickly when you maybe contradict me or go with me here, it seemed to me Towson had the momentum for the first, I'd say, 20 minutes. And time of possession would agree with me.
Well, yeah, and time of possession was a little bit misleading, I guess. But if you look just at the first half stats, all of the first half stats favored Towson.
Yes.
And it wasn't that close. You know, part of it was the Bison as far as time of possession. I mean, they got a couple of big plays that set up their touchdown. So, I mean, so that certainly hurt with the time of possession. I mean, Towson, I dominated's a little strong because they got their touchdown on a very good, and I don't know if it was a hot route or just a right play call. They caught C.J. Smith on a blitz, threw it right at him, and Brian Shepard missed a tackle. And they ended up getting 50 some yards off of that and ended up punching it in for a score from 3 yards out. That was the only score that they had. So dominated's a little strong. They got the Bison, they called the exact right play and the Bison missed a tackle, and that's how they got their score. I mean, it wasn't like they had this really big, long sustained drive and they just took it to NDSU. That's not exactly how it went. It was really a punt fest, right away.
Looking at that drive that they scored on, 12 plays, 77 yards, 5 minutes and 34 seconds. To me, that's a pretty good drive. It's better.
They got almost all of those 77 yards, though. How many of them came on that one pass play?
Let's check it out.
I mean, you know, yeah, the 12 plays, 77 yards looks, you know, it looks good, but they got all the yards on one play. And that's what I'm saying. I mean, were there some extra plays in there? Did they scratch out a couple of first downs? Yeah, but it wasn't like it was 6, 7, 8, 4, 9, 12. That wasn't how that drive went. It was one big shot.
Right. And of course this thing doesn't show me what those plays were. I'd have to go into, unfortunately, it just doesn't. I don't know why.
Well,
it should. I know what you mean. There was that one big play. Regardless, to me, it seemed like Towson was able to control and play the way they wanted to play in the first 20 minutes or so. And then, as I was sitting around watching the game, the kicker came out for Towson. And I made the comment, I go, this guy's 5 for 12 this year. Their kicker is 5 for 12 for Towson this year. And what came about, the block kick by Colton Hegel, I didn't expect that. But I knew that it wasn't going to be good with Towson going for special teams, field goals, punting, anything to that nature. They were not, you know, they were not a good special teams team. The Tigers weren't. Big block kick by Colton Hegel, picked up by Kyle Emanuel, ran back to about the 5-yard line, Ryan Smith touchdown. To me, that was the that was it. When Colton Hegel blocked that kick, from where I was sitting, it seemed like momentum shifted and NDSU had the game. And for you, was it that, did that feel that way in the stadium too?
Yeah, it really did. And once that happened, then the Bison got the lead, and then of course coming right back down and scoring again before the end of the half. At that point, it was the kind of feeling was, it's over, Johnny. We're going to come out, and with the way that the Bison have played in the second half, I mean, you're not going to beat it. Terrence West was just not going to beat us. And he just wasn't, and that was the end of it. It just really was. But yeah, the momentum swing there was absolutely huge.
You could totally tell it on that play, and then the C.J. Smith interception, like you alluded to, big in that regard. And then the second half was kind of, well, here we go again. I mean, NDSU, I tweeted out, I said, you know, if Towson's in this game by the third quarter, I'll be surprised. 21-7 at the half, third quarter, NDSU scores on their opening possession. That was it. I mean, kind of from that point, you go, yep, this is how it goes. You know, and NDSU and just completely dominated Towson by the end of it. It switched completely after that block kick. Now, were we shocked? I think the line was 13.5. I said it was going to be 34-14.
We should have, my brother and I had talked about swinging by a gambling establishment on the way down and placing a wager on the Bison and doubling our life savings, but we were not able to convince Papa Jones to swing by.
Papa White Shadow.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that line was just, that was too low.
Yeah, it was
just too good.
It was too low, and not surprising was the win, the victory. I think the question now after the 35-7 victory, and I'll look at some of these stats here. They're not, again, eye-popping. You look at NDSU rushing-wise, Crockett and Ojeri, consistency. Ojeri, 85 yards. Crockett, 86. Both had a touchdown. Jensen and Smith both had rushing touchdowns as well. Jensen, 13 of 18. He wasn't spectacular, but he was consistent. 5 missed passes, 135 yards, a touchdown to Zach Robb.
No turnovers. The Bison, one of the funny, just the interesting things, the Bison ran 31 fewer plays than Towson.
Yep.
31 fewer plays. Towson only outgained the Bison by 28. And that's it.
Right.
Bison and a lot of that was doubled up their rushing.
And a lot of that was through the air. Terrence West, by halftime, if I remember right, he was up where 60s, 70s when it came to rushing yards. Yeah. Only finished with 99 total yards and a touchdown on 22 carries. He got beat up. And I think that was the first time he felt that as a running back.
I mentioned my dad. That was one of the things he said. He noticed throughout the game. He said, man, he's getting up slower and slower every time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting tired of getting hit. And it was interesting, too, because the first two Towson possessions, I believe he was only in for like one play on those two possessions, which I thought was really interesting.
And they talked about that. That's part of what they do. It's all part of the, how do they put it? Part of the rotation is what they said. That
it's an interesting rotation.
Terrence West would come out because what they want him to do is be strong and healthy for the back half of the game. Instead of him being taking a load of the carries in the first half, they want to make sure he can get his legs and be stronger towards the end. It's just a protection thing. And again, you've made it this far doing the same thing you've done in the past. Why all of a sudden, you know, last game of the year, say, okay, we're going to change everything up. We're going to change our theme. We're going to change how we approach this and just run him all the time. Which I respected as Towson. And really, if you're Towson...
he's declaring for the draft, it sounds like. Who cares? Feed him the football.
Well, yeah, no, I understand that. And there would be that idea that, well, why not just feed him the football? But again, it's the same thing. If I'm NDSU, I look at this team and the way they cover the pass, and I go, I'm going to throw 25 times. Or the way they start games, and I go, I want to be aggressive right away. But cooler heads prevail in those things. And if you're a good coach, you go, okay, why deviate from what's worked all season long and just go, well, you know, he's not coming back next year and he's the reason we're here, so let's just give him the ball 10 times in the first quarter, 10 times in the second quarter, 20 times in the third, and just go, 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 go. You have to be able to be smart and go, we can feel it out. And frankly, Towson was in the game. I mean, until that block kicked, you're going, boy, they're stopping NDSU on some third downs. They're putting them in some uncomfortable third and longs. They look to be okay, and then that block changed everything.
But you never got the feeling that they had control of the game.
Well, you never do when it's NDSU because you never feel like they're losing control.
And NDSU's been in those situations, and you and I had talked about it at halftime where there was a close game, and you'd be like, eh, Bison by three touchdowns, and that's what would happen. And that was kind of the feeling that everybody got with this one too.
And nobody was surprised. A leading tackler for NDSU, Colton Heagle, my boy. Travis Beck, my boy. Carlton Littlejohn, my boy.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Okay.
A lot of these guys.
You got the hiccups over there?
A little bit of a hiccup. Beck had 9 tackles, 7 for Littlejohn, 6 for Heagle. The interception for C.J. Smith, my boy. Cole Jurek, Levon Perry, and Ryan Drevlo with sacks for NDSU.
2 tackles, I think, for Grant Olson. Back-to-back plays, I believe he had 2 tackles
in there.
He had
3 total.
3 total,
He had a tackle for a loss, so that was nice to see him in there. Marcus Williams, 2 pass breakups. Nice to see him. Moving forward, let's get to the other. First off, before we get to the other side, because there's a lot of topics we have to approach with NDSU. And this is going to be, it's going to be NDSU heavy. So bear with us, but it's going to be fun. This team, I wrote about it at length, where I believe it ranks FCS-wise, has to be the best team in the FCS history. I mean, I know that was a topic of conversation, had to have been down in Frisco. Had to have been in the car ride down there. Somebody had to have bring it up. You guys are pretty smart. You guys are football-minded, intelligent gentlemen. It had to have been a topic of conversation. I think this is the best collection ever in the FCS history as far as the team is concerned, this 2013 program. Brad?
I've been hesitant to go there.
Only the third team ever to complete a perfect season.
Yep. We talked about this a little bit last week. I'm not going to completely rehash our argument because we did it last week. I think the only team that has that's in the discussion is 96 Marshall. But man, it's real. The only thing that Marshall has going for them is margin of victory.
And in fact,
because I don't believe they had a single game. They did not have a game in single digits as far as margin of victory.
They didn't. The margin of victory average for them was 30 points. For NDSU over their 15 games, and what would have went up was 26 going into this game.
Yeah.
And it would have went higher.
Not a lot,
because after 15, maybe a point, maybe two. The margin of victory in the playoffs, though, I think was in favor of NDSU.
Yeah, that could be. And then I know, yeah.
The other two things you have to consider, Marshall's playing with 22 extra scholarships that last year in the FCS because they had declared for the FBS the year prior.
No,
and
I think you've got me on your side there. I think I would put NDSU probably as the best team.
And I was going to say the other part of it, too, is Marshall was so much better, but you never really thought of the team. You thought of one guy on that team,
yeah.
Randy Moss, as a freshman. Unbelievable talent. Shouldn't have been playing for Marshall. In fact, he should have been playing for Notre Dame or Florida. In any way, shape, or form, to me, as a team, as a whole, NDSU, from top to bottom, so good. All 24 positions, kicker and punter included, so good.
Yeah.
It's tough to argue against. And you saw what they did against a guy that is projected to go in the third round of the NFL draft and is going to leave a year early, which is unheard of the FCS and Terrence West for Towson. They held him in check. One touchdown, 99 yards. He's not used to that.
No.
He's not used to that. Zach Zenner ran for 5 yards against this defense. He was the second leading rusher in the FCS. Talaferro for Coastal Carolina, third leading rush in the FCS, ran for 50-some yards.
Yep. No, I think the defense really sets them apart. I mean, the defense is just so unbelievably good. And like you said, from top to bottom, I mean, there just was not a weakness on this team.
NFL-wise, and I want to do some research as we get closer to April, but, you know, NFL-wise, this team, and we've talked about before, after this year, at the end of it all, how many guys on this team get drafted in your mind? In your opinion?
One.
Billy Turner.
Yeah. Marcus Williams.
Himself out of a draft
pick.
Yes,
he did. I was disappointed with Marcus Williams this year, and not just in the interception total, because that number can be skewed because teams didn't throw at him as much, but he didn't seem into it. And part of it, I know he's been hurt.
Yes.
So, you know, to be fair to him, but he just didn't look like he had the same energy this year as what he's had in years past.
And I didn't get a chance to talk to him. I do know people that are close with Marcus, and it seemed to me that he was a little bit worried about A, critics, and B, a little bit worried about hurting himself in general. We saw it with Jadeveon Clowney, where he was so scared to get hurt and ruin what he had built up.
Yeah.
That you saw right away, he kind of rested back on who he was and didn't work towards something better. The better cornerback this year for NDSU was C.J. Smith.
No question. I had that discussion with a couple of people when we were down there. I agree.
Yeah, C.J. Smith was the better cornerback.
I mean,
Marcus Williams, don't get us wrong, was good. He'll get looks. He'll get camp invites.
Yes.
But I don't think he'll get drafted. Unless a team goes, look, you're worth taking a seventh rounder on because of what you did as a career as a whole.
Yeah.
And his pro day needs to go really well for him.
Yeah. Yes.
It really does. He needs to show good straight line speed. His ball skills are fine. We all know that's fine. But he needs to be able to defend physically. And, you know, it seemed towards the end of the year he started to get a little bit more physical, which is going to benefit him towards the end. But he really needs to get physical because the NFL is not one of these. You're not going to find a lot of cover twos in the NFL where they say just sit on an island. Like he was asked to do a lot with NDSU over the past few years.
Yeah.
He's got to be able to cover in man. So I agree with you there. I don't know if there's anybody else off this team from the senior group that gets a camp invite.
Jury, maybe. He's small.
He's too small. He's not that fast.
Yeah.
Outside of Williams, I don't know. Gimstead, I believe, is a senior. Gimstead.
Yeah. You know, maybe one of the big guys on the D-line. Maybe.
Maybe Perry.
Maybe.
Maybe.
At least gets an invite. But
outside of that,
don't you call up Mel Kiper? And isn't he in your Rolodex somewhere?
Yeah, I wish. Well, actually, the guy would be Corey Chavis.
Oh, sure, yeah.
He's a guy who does draftnasty.com, I believe is what it's called. And he's actually really good, intelligent when it comes
to Corey Chavis on the phone.
Draft project. And that's kind of a project of mine. I'm going to see if I can reach out to him and figure out, because I want to ask him not only about Turner Williams, but I do want to ask him about Brock Jensen. Because mechanically, speed-wise, he just doesn't seem like
he's not an NFL quarterback.
He's not an NFL quarterback, but that's not the point. The point is, does he get a look based off of success?
No.
And you're just saying flat out no.
No. Steve Walker didn't get a look. And as far as just straight passing,
good point.
Steve was a better passer than Brock.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very nice.
I don't get that from you very often.
Kind of shut me up there. next year, let's approach that subject.
There's more for this year. Let's do awards.
End of the year awards.
Yep.
That's right, because I do want to – there is an email from our – and remember, you can email us at pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. That's pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com.
So nice he's saying it twice.
And we have an email in there from back in October, actually, that – addresses the topic that I wanted to get into in a little bit. But end of the year awards, we can keep them simple.
Okay.
Let's
go.
I
like simple. I'm good with simple.
Let's go team offensive MVP.
Offensive MVP?
I'll let you answer.
Brock Jensen.
Okay.
Brock Jensen. That's the only answer.
I have to go Brock Jensen as well. Most surprising player on the offensive side of the ball this year.
Most surprising?
Guy where you went, oh, okay.
Maybe Zach Vrah. We talked about this early on that in previous years he'd been a guy who'd showed up with big games against teams that weren't very good and then had been kind of disappeared a little bit against good teams, and he completely erased that this year. So
single season record for yards at NDSU.
Yeah. So I would probably say it's surprising. I think that's the closest thing, because I think for the rest of the guys, they kind of were who we thought they were.
They are who we thought they were. Need that drop. Yep, Zach Vrah to me too is the guy that surprised me the most. And in fact, I think really went under the radar because NDSU is such a balanced offense.
Oh, I disagree that he went under the radar.
How many awards did he get, though, postseason? I don't even know. I mean,
hardly anybody got any postseason awards. The biggest postseason award went to Carson Wentz.
Right, exactly. So, being like smartest player in the world.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, I wouldn't say but for that.
For a guy who finished third in the FCS in touchdown receptions, that's to me, you're going, well, I didn't even think about it. He flew. Yeah. That's what I mean by flying under the radar, where a guy who finishes third in the FCS in touchdown receptions, any other league, he's going, you know, he's up there for offensive player of the year. He's up there for wide receiver of the year. He's a first team all conference guy. I mean, he's a big time player, but because NDSU's offense is so balanced.
And that he's kind of perceived rightly or wrongly as the second best receiver on his own team.
I think that's wrong.
I would agree with you.
I think Ryan Smith's a good receiver. Ryan Smith is one of those guys that, if the Wildcat was available, he's your Wildcat guy. He's speed slot receiver. He can do a lot for
he's
you.
He's the Welker type.
Yeah, yeah, but he's not your best receiver.
No. Nope.
Your best receiver is Zach Vrah.
But I'm just saying that the perception.
I know what you mean. Yeah. And I think a lot of people want to perceive Ryan Smith as better because he's a Wahpeton guy. I think there's that hometown bias to it. But to me, he flew a little bit under the radar. And we didn't expect it out of him. Finally stayed healthy for a year and developed into one heck of a running back, wideout. Team defensive MVP.
I'm going to let you go first on this one.
Carlton Littlejohn.
Okay. That was one of the names that was in my head.
I give it to him because I would have given it to Grant Olsen had he stayed healthy all year, but Littlejohn going from middle back, outside linebacker to middle linebacker and the team not really skipping a beat defensively. And we learned that Littlejohn athletically is probably better than Olsen.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that was one of the things where we are so enamored with Grant Olsen because he's a charismatic guy and he's the smartest player defensively that we often forget how athletic the outside linebackers were. And Travis Beck is unbelievably fast. And so is Littlejohn. But Littlejohn is kind of a freak, essentially, where he's that long, lanky kind of middle backer, but he can pack a hit and he's a speed guy, too.
Littlejohn was one of the two guys that I had in my head.
Who's the other?
Colton Hegel.
Of course.
And we've talked about this too, but the fact that he allowed them to be so versatile and he allowed them to, you know, if he was their nickel corner and their starting safety.
Right.
And just, you never see that. You never see a starting safety move up to be a nickelback and they bring in Shepard an extra safety because Hegel's just that good. And he blitzes and he blocked the field goal.
Yep.
Hegel was the guy just because of what he allowed the coaching staff to do and the flexibility that he gave them.
Yeah. I like that take as well. Don't think you can really go wrong with either of them.
No.
Most surprising guy on the defensive side of the ball.
CJ Smith, not
yes.
close.
Yeah, I have to agree. Although, well, you kind of expect it out of what Kyle Manuel did, what you would expect
yeah,
out of him.
He flew a little bit under the radar just because Jarek got a lot of the headlines
same.
On that. But CJ Smith was amazing. He's
going
to be fun to watch.
And he really, you know, when everybody kind of started to notice him was after that Illinois State game when he had to guard the number one receiver for Youngstown State. A big game out in Youngstown, and he had some shutdown games. Physical guy, same kind of type of body as Marcus Williams, but athletic. He was a basketball player recruited out
of
high school.
He's tough, and he's willing to go in there and make
some
hits.
And the best part about him is I got an opportunity to talk to him, talk to the coaches, talk to the guy, John Richardson, who's a graduate assistant for NDC, mm-hmm. who kind of took him under his wing. Just talk about one of the things that came back a lot from everybody was that CJ Smith is humble. But when he gets onto the field, and this is what I like, is that you hear guys that go, he's humble, but when they get on the field, they get excited and they get emotional. And you saw that from CJ Smith as the season went along, that he really got into the game and he really got fired up. And that was fun to see from such a young guy. But you're right. You know, 3 interceptions this year, a lot of pass breakups. I want to say he led the team in pass breakups as I'm looking through the stats. Had... Where are you, CJ? Pass breakups had 14 this year. That's a huge number. Nobody else had.
And it's part of because they threw at him a lot.
Marcus Williams, but they did. But yeah. Even so, I mean, that's a solid number. He was a question. I mean, that part of the field was the question mark coming into camp was, well, who's going to take it over? You had Zach Colvin. You had Brendan Pierre, a senior in his own right, thinking, oh, boy, there's going to be a lot of competition. CJ Smith won it, and it was the right move by Kleiman, the defensive coordinator, put C.J. Smith at the corner position. He's only a sophomore,
yep.
You know, and a lot of teams are looking, boy, I don't want to throw to him. I really don't, because he's not afraid to man up.
Yep.
He's not afraid to man up. So I agree with you. He was the most surprising. Most disappointing aspect of the team this year. And that's tough to say.
You must have something in mind if you're asking it.
I do.
Yeah, I kind of figured. Most disappointing aspect.
Because I do have one that was most surprising.
I mean...
And it's a team thing.
Okay. I'm drawing a blank here, so you're going to have to...
Ability to force turnovers. They did not force a lot of turnovers this year. And that was one thing that you see with good teams, that they're able to force a lot of turnovers. The reason that NDSU's defense was so good is they just stopped teams. No, not a lot of forced fumbles, not a lot of picks. I know you're laughing. I'm not sure why.
This is the most nitpicky thing I've heard in my entire life. The best defense in the country by far.
Oh, yeah.
Man, you know, they could have done more. They just could have done
more. I'm not saying they could have done more. I'm just saying that if we're going to list.
They really disappointed me in that.
I'm not even saying disappoint. I'm just
saying exactly what you said. That's
the
word that you said.
That was the most disappointing part of it.
Okay.
But it wasn't like something where I'm going, they have to do it more. I'm just saying they could have caused more turnovers, created more turnovers.
Stop it. Stop it. Just stop it. I can't believe you picked something on the defense.
Oh, yeah.
To be most disappointing.
Well, then what would be most disappointing on the offensive part of it?
They went 15-0. There's a reason I couldn't come up with anything.
They didn't throw to the tight ends enough. You got to include those in the offense.
Oh, whatever. My goodness.
I don't know. To me, there's always things that you can correct or make better in a team.
Okay.
And no matter how, even if you go 15-0, even if you go 15-0, there's always parts. And to look at it from that standpoint, I think that's fair because the coaches are going to come back and look at it that way too. And don't laugh because you know that.
I'm laughing at you.
Well, that's how they're going to do it.
Time. I'm just going to keep laughing. Just going to keep laughing at you that somehow you found a most disappointing aspect.
I'm going to look at it that way because
okay, that's fine.
That's how the coaches are going to come back and go, hey, great season, national championship, it's great. We need to look at how we can cause more turnovers and maybe include tight ends in the offense a little bit more. That's how I think they're going to look at it. That's how I believe the coaches are going to come back when they look at tape and get ready for next season, is that there are things that we can make better. You're never perfect as a team.
Okay.
And I'm allowed here to sit here and critique.
You are. Yep. And I'm allowed to sit here and laugh at your critique.
Oh, please. Most surprising part of the team then. That they were the most successful at this year, that you went, okay, I didn't expect them to be that successful at this. What would it have been?
I would say...
There's two things I have in mind.
Yeah, I don't know if surprising is the right word, but maybe the biggest difference or the biggest upgrade or the thing that they did the most would have been just...
And I'm choosing very generic words.
Yeah.
So you can laugh at the disappointing.
No, I know you are.
And I understand what you mean by it, because disappointing is a really negative connotation, and surprising is one of those things where you go, oh, yeah,
I would say the most surprising development of this year's team was the way that Brock Jensen just never had that meltdown game. He would throw a pick, and it was, whatever. I'm not in the past. It was, if I threw one, I threw three.
Right.
And that just was not the case at all this year. And I think that was the biggest development. I don't know if it's a surprise necessarily, but I guess a little bit, because my first thought when he threw the early pick against Coastal Carolina, I believe, was, this might be Brock's meltdown game here. And it never came, it never happened, and it just didn't seem like it was even in his personality at that point.
One of the things that I liked when Brock answered that question after was that he gave kudos to the guy who made the pick, because he said it took a lot of guts for him to make the move he did. Because I think what he was saying is that it was a guess on his part.
And if he guessed wrong, it was six.
Yep.
The other way.
Yep. Because he thought that he was going to take a fly route and go over the top and stay over the top instead of it being an out route.
Well, yeah,
because
he guessed it was. And that says something about Brock's ability to read the defense. Yes. He saw there was nobody over the top. He said, I saw nobody over the top, which meant
this guy's got to
sit back, because he's not going to jump it.
And, right, exactly. And he did. And he made the pick six. Yes, I like that. But a really small part of it, I kind of got used to it last year, is that NDSU is going to allow a pretty big return, most likely in the kickoff return. You didn't see that.
Okay.
Teams did not get good returns against NDSU, which goes down the line to field position, to how comfortable your defense feels, so on and so forth. The punting game has been amazing no matter what. Going into that New Hampshire game, in 13 games, and I have to check the stats now even, but in 13 games, NDSU had allowed 7 yards of punt returns. 7 yards. Unbelievable how good the special teams was. But the kickoff returns, when you think about it and you think back, you go, boy, yeah, that's right. They didn't really allow a lot of big returns.
That's a good point.
And that always helped with coverage. And it always helped with defense and field position. So I think awards-wise, anything else you want to maybe get out there? Because I think that's about it.
Yeah.
Disappointing, surprising.
There's
a word I want to call you right now.
I can't say it on
the
family show, folks.
Yeah, I can't say it on the podcast.
Oh, I enjoy getting you to that point, though.
Yeah, I'm glad you do.
No, not really.
Yeah, I think that kind of...
I think that pretty well covers it.
15-0, national champions 3 times. All right. Let's address this. Chris Kleiman's going to be the head coach.
You want to maybe pick worst player on the team?
Chris Kleiman's going to be the head coach next year. I might say most disappointing. Should I go that route? Chris Kleiman, of course, head coach next year, like I've just said for the third time in a row, as I reiterate myself and try to catch my train of thought here. He's named some assistants.
Is there a worst play of the year maybe that you want to bring
up? Six assistants. Can we move on?
I'm not done yet, I don't think.
Oh, hang on.
My God, are you still talking?
Yes. Yes, I am.
All right. Now.
So let's break this down from a fundamental standpoint.
Six assistants named under Chris Kleiman's staff. Tim Polasek, I think, is the one that is going to catch a lot of attention. Randy Hedberg as well. I believe he's coming from Southern Illinois. Yes. Quarterbacks coach after 6 seasons with Southern Illinois. He'll be the quarterback coach with NDSU, in fact. Jamar Cain is a guy that'll be a defensive ends coach. Matt Entz is another name that's probably recognizable. Tim Polasek, to me, is the biggest get here, because when you think back to when he left for Northern Illinois, there was, I want to say collectively, a lot of, maybe not disappointment, but sadness, I suppose, from the players. He recruited a lot of Wisconsin players. He was very integral in getting Wisconsin players into NDSU, particularly Brock Jensen. 740 The Fan and Ryan Gellner on Friday before the championship game had Steve Jensen, Brock Jensen's dad, on the show, which I thought was a great interview. One of those interviews you want to sit there and talk, or at least listen to, until the interview's over. They did a great job with that, so kudos to them. But one of the things he talked about was the recruitment of Brock Jensen. And Jensen was, I think, not heavily recruited out of college or out of high school. He was recruited by Wisconsin marginally, went to their camp, and according to Brock Jensen's dad, was the best guy at their camp in high school. And that's according to him, of course. Wasn't offered a scholarship at Wisconsin, was offered to be a preferred walk-on. There's no Division I AA schools in Wisconsin, so that's advantage NDSU. They came in with an offer, and Polasek was very consistent and persistent in his recruitment of Jensen. I know that Brock's dad talked about he'd look back at basketball games, and Polasek would be at the basketball games of Jensen's, watching him play basketball. I mean, that's commitment right there. Sure. So Brock committed to NDSU. It ended up being better for everybody involved. Having him back, I think, is going to be big for the continued development of NDSU. That, to me, is kind of a big get for them. Connor Riley, Nick... Oh, boy. I think it's... Gosser, two assistant coach for NDSU, will be back next year for the Bison. Bull moves on to Wyoming. And any comment on the coaches underneath Kleiman now?
I mean, we obviously don't know a lot about them other than, you know, Polasek coming back. But, I mean, we'll get to know them. It'll be fun to see how the team looks different other than just the players next year. It'll be, you know, be interesting to see if they do anything strategically different than what we've seen.
Polasek, along with being an offensive coordinator next year, will be the running backs coach as well. So, good for that. I think Kleiman got the kind of staff that you look at and go, if you're an NDSU fan, okay, good. And I think for recruiting purposes, too, because that's going to be key, it's good as well. Speaking of next year, Brad, let's get into it. Early look at 2014. I don't think an undefeated season will come about, just saying that. However, Tyler he's from Kentucky. I like to say Tennessee just because of alliteration. This is the email he sent us for October. Ideas for the future. Thought it'd be worth looking at. Here's the guys we lose. And he's talking about NDSU. Jensen at quarterback, Ojuri, Marcus Williams, Billy Turner, Levon Perry, Ryan Drevel, Grant Olson, Tyler Gimmestead, Cole Jurek. Here's what returns. John Crockett, Andrew Bonnet, both tight ends are gone. Jack Plankers, Joe Hag, Josh Colville, Zach Johnson, Zach Vrah, Eric Perkins, Kerry Woods. I think Nate Moody, from what I remember, could be a junior, but he won't play that much. He'll be Trevor Gebhardt. Keller and LeCompte are back as well. Defensively,
the D-line takes a hit.
It does.
Big hit.
But you still get Brian Schatz, Mike Hardy, Kyle Emanuel back.
Yep.
Your linebackers are going to be Travis Beck, Exley Thornton, Carlton Littlejohn, plus Pierre G. Tucker and Nick DeLuca. C.J. Smith, Colton Hegel, Christian Dodzik in your secondary.
The team should be a playoff team and should be a contender for the Missouri Valley title again. Although UNI is going to be tough next year.
Oh, yeah.
They return all 22.
All 22?
I believe so.
Farley wasn't a senior, and he got lost for the season
Keep in mind, I'm quoting my brother on this. That's my source, so I probably need to do a little bit better research than that. But they're returning most, if not all, of their starters.
Okay. Now, early outlook on this team. Can they make the championship again?
Well, can they?
With the talent they return.
It's so tough because you just don't know Carson Wentz yet.
Carson Wentz is the wild card in all of this,
yes.
Correct?
Yeah. I mean, it's You know what? He could be another Brock Jensen. He's got the frame. He's got the talent to do it. But you just don't know what you're going to get until you throw the guy in there. So it's, can they do it? Sure. But Carson's going to have to step in and not miss a beat.
I think it is not out of the realm of possibilities they could get there again, because, I mean, what we saw this year, what the FCS had to offer, NDCU returns a lot of that talent. You're right when you say, yes, UNI is going to be tough. And in fact, I'm looking at it. They lose their place kicker, who is an All-American, which we've seen, largely important. Colin Albrecht was a D lineman who I know saw a little bit of time. But outside of that, I'm looking at some of these names. I'm not really recognizing a lot of them. And the big guy that comes back is David Johnson. He's huge coming back. Jake Farley does come back as a linebacker. Kevin Vereen, their big wideout, he comes back. He's only a sophomore. Sawyer Cole Morgan has an opportunity to bounce back after a rough sophomore year. There's a lot of talent on that team coming back.
Yep.
A lot of talent. So, yeah, it'll be UNI and NDSU again, plus Zach Zander of South Dakota State. But it'll be Carson Wentz will be a very integral part of this team, no doubt about it. But the backup running back, can Chase Morlock be as good as Crockett was to Sam Ojeri?
And they got a redshirt guy, I think, at running back as well. So running back, we'll see. But honestly, there's a couple of positions that I just don't worry. I don't really worry at all about. I don't worry about running back. But I mean, from every year since I've been following the program closely, I don't really look at the names at running back. I just know they're going to be good.
And offensive lines that same way to me.
I don't look at the offensive line because they're going to be good. And linebacker has pretty much been that way as well. I don't really look at the names because the linebackers are just good.
And the defensive line has been as consistent there, but they're losing the big thing that's made them so successful is depth.
Yeah.
And they need to create that. And it's going to be tough because you're going to work in a lot of new players. You're going to work in a lot of new players depth wise. The secondary and linebacking core is going to be just fine. In my opinion, it's going to be fine. And again, got to play opposite of C.J. Smith. And what are you going to do now when you have nickel packages? Who's going to be your nickel guy who's going to come in? No Brian Shepard anymore.
Yeah.
So that'll be the question. But
you got Heagle back.
Heagle back. That's huge. Little John back. I think that's huge. Back, of course. So many things. Kyle Emanuel. If Carson Wentz ends up being the kind of guy that a lot of people think he could be, and it's the same thing we talked about with Nick Mertens, though. Yeah. If Nick Mertens ends up being the guy he could be.
So who do you think is going to be the worst returning player this year?
I got to move on from that. Why do you got to do that? Next year, they'll be good. Next year, they will be good. So that will be fun to see. We got to stay local. I think we have to talk about NDSU men's basketball. The women's basketball team is 3-11 right now. For those that are wondering, not doing so hot. Two things about NDSU men's basketball. First off, Notre Dame just beat Duke.
Yeah.
Huge for NDSU. Be even bigger if Notre Dame would have beat Ohio State earlier. But even so, one of those things, Notre Dame continues to play well, NDSU continues to climb because your strength of schedule starts to look a little bit better.
Yep.
So there's that. Also, the Summit League this year gets underway. Expectations, Brad, for the Summit League after the non-conference for NDSU in general?
I mean, I don't think the expectations for NDSU for the Summit League has changed.
Right.
Win. Just win, baby.
What about the bench play for NDSU? At what point does Mike Feld have to show up against somebody other than Mayville States? Or is it that important anymore?
With the development of Carlin Dupree, it might not be.
Okay.
If he's going to have to play a role in one important game. You might not need him for more than one, but you're going to need him for one. So we'll see how many minutes he's even getting come tournament time. Because frankly, if he's not making shots, which again, against anybody other than Mayville, he hasn't been.
Right.
He can't be on the floor because he doesn't do anything else.
Here's three teams to look for as we get into this Summit League conference. South Dakota State's going to be good. They have a transfer back from Florida, and his name escapes me at this point. But I know he's back in from Florida. He's a good player. But South Dakota State at 8-7 when they started the year. They're 8-7 overall now as they get into conference play. Omaha is a team you have to look for. You look at their non-conference schedule, they weren't setting the world on fire, but they did beat a Nevada team on the road, which, however good Nevada is this year, I'm not sure. But you have
is Nick Fizikas still playing there?
Yeah, that's true. I don't think he is.
He's not, okay.
But you still have to give respect to that to go on the road and beat Nevada. I think that's one. Omaha is a team to look at. IPFW, or Fort Wayne, I should say, had a good non-conference. Won some solid games on the road. Played Illinois pretty well. But Denver is another team as well.
Yep.
They have to look at too. So
there's going to be some fun home games this year.
Okay. I guess it's not much.
Who do you think is the worst team in the Summit League?
Oh my goodness. South Dakota. I don't know. Let's move on to, should we get to NFL playoffs?
Yeah, I think we should run through that quick.
Okay. Here we.
National.
Okay. Hang on. Trying to think. How do I want to approach this?
This could take some time, folks.
It could. Tell me your thoughts on the victory for New Orleans.
If you, for those of you, if the magic of radio, there was about a 3-minute pause while he was thinking that he just edited it out there. So just so you know. What, you have to repeat the question. I was
New Orleans victory over Philly.
I told you. I believe is that's my reaction. I told you.
Go into it a little bit more.
Well, here's the thing. I was dry. We were listening to it on the radio. We drove all night to get back from Frisco, so we didn't get it. I didn't get it really a chance to see any of it. But I mean, I think it's one of those things where I didn't see if there was any Saints players that took to Twitter after the game, but I bet there was a whole lot of people that wanted to.
Right.
Because they had to have been sick of hearing, "Oh, you can't win on the road," and I mean, I certainly would have been. And they came out. It wasn't a pretty game.
No,
but
doesn't
they
matter.
They
in
got
the
job done, and they're gonna have a rough one next week, I think, at Seattle. But good for New Orleans. I like I said, I know you're not a fan.
No,
we
not
talked
really.
About that.
Yeah.
But I enjoy them. I think they're fun to watch, and hopefully they can give Seattle a game.
Worst player on New Orleans team. Sorry, I had to.
You're just trying to take ammo away from me now.
I am a little bit. I was surprised. I'll say surprised because I thought they were going to lose by quite a bit because I just thought the weather and they don't play well outside of New Orleans. Those things, those factors to me were going to go in favor of Philadelphia. Didn't.
Yeah.
I think another aspect of it that I kind of overlooked was veteran quarterback in playoffs. It's huge. You know, Nick Foles, first time. Great regular season, but you can't speak enough to the experience.
Drew Brees is in the con. He's maybe a quarter step below the Brady, Manning, Rodgers trio.
Right.
He's either in that group or he's a quarter step below. But he is right there.
Okay, who else played that day?
The other game would have been that insane Kansas City and Indianapolis game.
And I didn't get to see much of that.
It was a 38-10 lead in the third quarter for Kansas City.
Right.
And they lost 45-44. And I had Kansas City in that game. That would have been, again, that was a game obviously didn't get to see as well. Crazy. It was the second largest playoff comeback next to the Frank Wright game for the Buffalo Bills back in the day.
The question that's going to be is Andy Reid and Alex Smith playoff good? You know, is Andy Reid a playoff coach? Is Alex Smith a playoff quarterback? Or was it have to do with the fact that Jamal Charles was out of the game?
That doesn't help when you're trying to run away a lead in the second. I mean, they were up 28 points in the third quarter of a playoff game.
Right.
I mean, did they gag it away? Yeah, but you can't tell me, oh, these guys can't coach in the playoffs. Well, they did through, you know, they had a 28-point lead. Something obviously went wrong in losing, what, a top three running back? Probably top three running backs in the game right now are Jamal Charles, LeSean McCoy, and Adrian Peterson in some order.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you.
And you lose him. Yeah, that's a problem.
That's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
It's your safety blanket. I understand that. that to me is more so the reason than, oh, look, they can't play in the playoffs. Now, I don't know if that's the reason as much as it is the fact that they just didn't have their horse to hand off the ball and take off time. Today, Sunday, as we record this, first game was Cincinnati and, don't tell me, San Diego. Sorry, I watched most of the game. Disappointed at most of the game. Andy Dalton now. At what point, and it'll probably take a couple more years, but at what point do you go, okay, what makes Andy Dalton better than Tony Romo? What makes Andy Dalton
I don't think he's in the conversation with Romo.
Most disappointing playoff quarterback to this point. I mean, Joe Flacco at least won a game after three years, didn't he?
He's year three. Oh yeah, Flacco has won a game every year that he's been.
That's
in the
right.
Playoffs.
He has. This is the first one at home for Dalton too.
Yeah, I think if there's a comparison to be made, there almost is a comparison to be made between Flacco and Andy Dalton, because the supporting cast that Flacco had with the Ravens is a whole heck of a lot better. How much worse are the Ravens with Dalton rather than Flacco the last couple of years?
That's a good point.
He had the amazing run last year, but I don't know that, I don't know that those guys are really that much different.
And a lot had to be done with the fact that Cincinnati's offensive line played poor in that second half. But Dalton was going for a first down on a third and long, dove head first, which doesn't mean he gives himself up. Ground caused the fumble, which is completely legal if he hadn't been touched down. Can happen. And from there, it was downhill. Threw a couple interceptions, turnover on downs. Just offensively, they couldn't get anything going. He played awful. And the Chargers, to their credit, did enough. And now they have a game where they can go, hey, we can win in Denver. They don't think and look, oh boy, we're not going to win here. They think they can beat Denver.
You know, you talk about
scary
not,
matchup.
You
know, you, scary matchup
you
for
talk
the
about,
Broncos.
Scary. I've got the Broncos by 17.
All right.
If you talk about you not liking the Saints, I can't stand the Chargers.
I can't stand them either.
I don't like Philip Rivers. He looks like the word I can't say in the podcast, child
right.
of Jay Cutler and John Gruden.
Right, he just looks weird.
I just don't. Not a Philip.
No, we're basing fan. Our like off of looks, but
yes.
No, I agree with
Sorry,
you.
Sorry, did this turn into the girls podcast on
wow.
sports? Is that what just happened?
Wow!
Here?
What? Look at you.
What?
Look at you.
What? How am I still single?
There's a reason my fiance doesn't listen to this. Evidently,
why am I still single? I don't understand.
So yeah, the Chargers. I don't like them either, but they did what they had to do. The Chargers losing by 17. I think the Broncos, if I'm the Chargers, I have confidence going into this game because I'm familiar at least with the Broncos, and I've beat them once this year.
Yep.
So there's that. Niners over the Packers. Packers put up a good fight defensively, but Niners ultimately the better team. Colin Kaepernick, that's a player right there. He's a gamer. Good for me because I have the Niners kind of moving on to the Super Bowl, and they're my preseason Super Bowl pick. Now we'll transition into next week. First two games, Saints Seahawks. Who do you have?
Seahawks.
Yep. Colts Patriots.
Patriots.
Colts. Niners Panthers. No Gronkowski. That's why I don't think the Patriots are going to be that good enough to beat the Colts.
They have hardly had Gronk all year though, and they just keep winning. And I don't know that luck's quite ready to beat Brady and Belichick in New England yet.
Well, they're not playing defense though.
I understand. Well, but Belichick's coaching the defense.
Yeah, and they don't really have a run game. I get all that, but yeah. I like Luck. I like the Colts in that one. All right. Niners-Panthers.
Niners.
I have the Niners, too, although it'll be a fun one.
Yeah, I will enjoy that game, but yeah, I've got San Fran.
Chargers-Broncos. I have the Broncos, not by as much as you do.
I have Broncos by many.
But yes, we agree on one. I'll take the Colts.
Who's the worst playoff team still left?
Chargers.
Okay.
I can answer that one definitively. Chargers are the worst playoff team left. Let's look at the line, Seattle by 8.
What was the most disappointing part of Indianapolis' comeback?
Andrew Luck's picture that got tweeted out when he was half naked by Pat McAfee or whatever, the punter.
Yeah, he's a character, by the way.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Which evidently ends up leading you down the wrong path if you're Chris Cluey. which we won't get into.
Ooh, yeah, that's I don't mind taking on a touchy subject. We don't have time to get into that one.
We have time for the BCS National Championship.
Yeah, we do.
Who do you have?
I have Auburn.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't like it, but I have Auburn.
Why? Gut feeling or what?
A little bit, and part of it is I'm going to pick the SEC until someone beats them.
Nebraska beat them. Oklahoma beat them.
Not in the BCS title game.
Okay. Good point.
I mean, you know, until somebody knocks off the king, I'm going to keep taking the king.
It's a good point.
So, I mean, and, you know, I'm not, it's not obviously X's and O's. I'm not breaking down the game film, but I just, they just keep winning. They just keep putting up crystal.
These bowl games, I'm so glad that the bowl games, the bowl system essentially is over. They're going to a four-man playoff system because, you know, you get these crowds like Oklahoma fans cheering about the fact they beat Alabama. Alabama did not care about the Sugar Bowl. They did not want to be there. For you to beat a shell of itself as an Alabama football team, no. I'm not impressed.
I mean,
I am impressed with the way the quarterback played for Oklahoma, whatever his name was. But there, then again, you want a meaningless bowl game. In the end, it's meaningless. Money. Yeah, yeah, sure, that's
but
great,
I mean,
but
all these, none of this is going to, that's not going to change next year.
No, but at least we'll have, you know, people that say we're a national semifinalist.
Ideal, what's the ideal number of teams that you, if you would make the BCF, or the playoff in college
right.
football, what's your ideal number of teams?
16.
16?
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, I think that's too many.
Well, because I want to put in six conference winners, get rid of conference championships. So you have the major six conferences, whatever they are at this point. But you have the major six conference winners, and then you just go by ranking or, you know, I would say media poll over a coach's poll
to put them in. 16, I think, is too many. I think eight's the number. I think they're going to get to eight, and I think they're going to get there within the next 5 years.
Six conference champions plus, like, two at-larges?
I don't even know if there's going to be six conference champions anymore.
Right.
I think. Yeah. I mean, I think the SEC, the Big 12, the Big 10, the Pac-12, ACC, but whatever the shell
AAC.
Of the Big East, whatever. Yeah, the Big East, whatever it is now, the AAC. I don't know if they get an AQ anymore.
Well, you know, Central Florida is out of the AAC, which used to be like the Big East, I believe.
Yes.
And they won their bowl game, the Fiesta Bowl.
They beat Baylor.
Yeah. Which a lot of people were kind of surprised about.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I give him props
no
to that, but again,
to Central Florida.
You ever seen Blake Bortles' girlfriend, Lindsay Duke? Look her up.
Okay.
Just promise me if you do nothing else tonight, do that.
All right.
You'll thank me. I have Florida State in this one. I think Jameis Winston is too good, and Auburn got lucky twice. Frankly, you know, to me, they're not one of these teams where you go, oh, they should be there. I think that they got lucky twice. Tip pass and a kick return for a touchdown. So that to me is who I have in that championship. I think that's going to do it. 026 podcast is wrapped up. Thank you all so much for joining us. Marcus and Mayville says we were talking about nicknames last week.
Yeah.
My nickname in the 2013 era would be DG5 in the NBA.
DG5?
Yes.
Okay. Why, because you're 5 feet tall?
Probably.
Okay.
Thank you for that. No one knows my height on radio, by
the
way.
They do now.
Great. Yours would be BJ.
I'm the White Shadow. What are you talking about?
Your jersey number.
You're a bean. I've got a cool nickname. You're a bean.
Or Thunder Dan. I could be Thunder Dan.
No, it's Marley.
Yeah, I know.
You can't have that. I'm the White Shadow.
I'd rather take Pinto.
You're either a bean, a horse, or a crappy car. Congratulations.
You have to have the and on there, and I'd be a horse. Come on now. Horses are awesome.
Okay.
Do you not like horses? Do they scare you?
They do not scare me. I do not have any strong feelings one way or another about horse.
Let me ask you. Do you like, and I can't think of the name. Oh, no. It's become awkward.
You look like you had something somewhere promising that you
I
were
did,
going
and
with
it was
going
to be great, too.
What do you think was the worst joke of this podcast that you attempted
Thank
to make?
Thank you so much for listening to the 026 podcast. Please, please come back. I beg you. I know this one, my worst and best, was just horrible. Oh, please, please come back to the podcast, the 026 podcast here on KFGO.com. Make sure and check us out on iTunes. Leave a comment under our podcast page on KFGO.com. Send us an email, pinto.whiteshadow@gmail.com. We'll talk about that. Next week, we'll get into basketball. I think it's time. Conference games start to kick off a lot for the Summit League, the NBA, college basketball. We'll throw in football, of course, at the NFL. We'll talk college football, national championships, coaches.
We're going to start to get hoops heavy. I'm excited for it.
Hoops heavy is going to come down, baby. Hoops heavy is going to come down. So we'll talk all of that again. Like I said, give us your comments, your questions. You can follow me on Twitter at PintoKFGO. You can follow Brad Jones
at the Bison Guy.
Thank you so much, everybody. So, for my co-host Brad Jones, I'm Daniel Gunderson. Thank you so much for listening to the 026 podcast. Remember to tip your waitresses. And please, when you think about this podcast, don't ask the question if this was the worst podcast in Pinto White Shadow Show history. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day. How you like me now? How you like me now?